This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Our special series, Generation Stuck, continues now as we explore what it means to be a 20-something in today's economy. According to a WBUR-AMP agency nationwide poll, 70% of 23 to 29-year-olds feel optimistic about their futures and believe they can attain the American dream, which they define as providing for their families, living debt-free, and ending up better off than their parents.
At the same time, though, many of these so-called millennials say they're struggling to get meaningful work. Nearly 40% say they have fewer opportunities than previous generations, and over half of them say they're overeducated or overqualified for their current job.
So is there a sense of entitlement here? And how different are their hopes and dreams than those of previous generations, from the baby boomers to the Gen Xers? Listeners, you can join this conversation. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston.
And to get us started, we're going to hear from 26-year-old Catherine Round, who graduated from Tufts 4 years ago. Since then, she's been hoping to pursue a career in global health, but has had to settle for work as a bartender to pay the bills. Today, we pick up her story with her decision last summer to quit her job at the bar and move back in with her parents on the North Shore.
These the boxes I gave you this morning?
Yes.
That's the third box.
Take these. Right. Right there. It's empty. John Rounds.
I'm supposed to be here for the heavy lifting. Can you lift it up like there? Or do you want me to be on this end?
Oh, my God. I have to move home again? I already did this. I lived at home for over a year. But I made that decision fully aware that in all likelihood, I was going to end up moving home without a job or any other opportunities. But I could not, in good conscience, do anything else. I couldn't.
Well, I'm just glad she's not working as a bartender anymore. I thought that was a very hard job. And very unhealthy. She was doing it for too long.
Fine. All right, let's go. My parents, they would say that it is not my fault, if you were to ask them. I mean, every time I don't get a job, my mom's like, "Are you kidding me? You know you're perfect for the job. This is nuts." But it's out of their hands, and it hurts them to see me in this position. So the only thing that they know how to do, really, is to sort of keep pushing me. So I do get a lot of telling me to be doing this and that. And I know that they're very well-intentioned about it. But sometimes it's like, I know. What do you think I'm doing?
We're back on the air. I've applied to about 9 positions now through AmeriCorps. AmeriCorps is almost, you could think of it the way I understand it, as like a networking site that allows nonprofits to recruit employees that work on the government dime. They don't have to pay for them because the government pays us about $1,000 a month.
Wait, how come the government's allowed to pay you below minimum wage but nobody else is?
It's volunteer work, technically. Mm. It's paid volunteer work.
So I applied to AmeriCorps because I thought, I need to change something. I can't keep applying to jobs online. Actually, on Tuesday, was contacted by a young lady based in the Red Cross chapter out in the Bay Area. I think that I am the ideal candidate for this position. And fortunately, I think that they realized that because on the phone, she did say verbatim, "I would like to offer you this job." I've been waiting 4 years to hear those words. This is the closest I have come to anything resembling a formal professional opportunity in a very long time.
I'm curious about this, this telephone interview you're going to have, I guess, tomorrow or whenever. I mean, they seem to be interested.
Yes. I told you, one of the women that I spoke with, one of the young ladies, she's more or less informally said, "I would like to offer you the position."
Well, I'm hoping that you get a really well-paid position before you have to sign a contract.
Listen, they're making their decision.
It took me 2 years to get to the point where I felt like AmeriCorps was my only choice. My family doesn't support it because I think it's just another year that I'm putting off starting a career.
I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to do.
No, none of us do. We just have to put one step in front of the other.
Right, so it's Friday, August 17th. Got some news today. So it's actually kind of funny because last night I was talking with my girlfriends about just what if I didn't get it. I wonder what my reaction would be. I don't even know how I would react because you get rejected so many times, you know, what do you do? Do you start going crazy or do you start going numb? And this afternoon I had the opportunity to find out when they called me and rejected me. And it turns out it's a little bit of both, but mostly just acceptance. It's almost funny. It's like, of course, that's what happened.
I don't know. I guess I'm just rambling now. I don't really know what to say because I'm just so lost.
Can't even get volunteer work, Kat. What is going on? My sister's theory is that I must have murdered somebody in a past life. Anyway, it's me signing out for now. We'll be checking in later. Hopefully something good's going to happen soon.
And that was 26-year-old Catherine Round, one of the radio diarists for our special series, Generation Stuck, detailing her challenging experience in the job market. So listeners, are you a 20-something struggling to make your way in this world, even though you've done all the right things? Do you identify with Catherine's story? Gen Xers and baby boomers, what do you say? Are these the same struggles you faced when you were in your 20s? Do the millennials have it tougher than you, or do some of them suffer from a sense of entitlement? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And joining us now from New York to talk about the differences and some of the surprising similarities between the generations is Robin Marantz-Hennig. She's co-author of 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck?, which she wrote with her 20-something daughter, Samantha Hennig. And Robin, welcome to Radio Boston. Great to have you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
And also joining us right here in the studio is Nate Goldman. He's creator of WBUR's Generation Stuck series. He's also the social media producer at WBUR. And he himself is a 20-something guy. Nate, great to have you with us. Thanks for coming in.
Good to be here.
So, Robin, let me start with you. We started this segment talking about millennials and their view of the American dream. And according to our poll, most of them thought they had a pretty good shot at that American dream, being able to provide for their families, live debt-free, maybe even do better than their parents. Has that basic optimistic view of the American dream changed from past generations?
Well, I heard survey results that were even more optimistic. I heard one survey that said that 96% of young people think that their life will turn out the way they want it to. And it's odd that they are still believing in the American dream while they're acknowledging that they probably won't have a better, more materially comfortable life than their parents did, since to me that's always been the American dream. But I think that this sense that things will work out is sort of, although I was about to say this until I heard Catherine's story, but I think that it tends to be an attitude that a lot of people in their 20s have. You know, they're just starting out on their adult life, and they get knocked down sometimes, but there does seem to be, you know, a longer horizon in their view, where they think that if they just work hard enough, maybe things will all shake out. And that was the case in my generation, too. Baby boomers tended to feel like that as well, and we got knocked down a lot on the way up.
Sure. Nate, what is the big change for this generation? What's the biggest challenge that many people, for which many people say they feel stuck?
Well, I think one of the larger stories here is the crushing debt that a lot of these 20-somethings are experiencing. I mean, the numbers show, you know, that the cost of college tuition since 1990 has increased by 300% at a time when, you know, medium income for entry-level employment for young adult males has dropped 10%. So, you know, that seems to be a real issue for them, you know, having to pay these extreme amounts of money while also being paid left at an entry-level position. And then also, you know, perhaps the psychological toll of having these expectations set by a previous generation of how to find a job and constantly falling short of those expectations.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those expectations. And Robin, I want to play a piece of tape and explore this theme. Let's listen to the father of Generation Stuck's other radio diarist. This is Sam Mackin. And here's Sam's dad talking about those expectations that perhaps have been heaped on this generation. Let's listen.
Get your college degree. That's the key to the next thing. That was the expectation we laid on you. So yes, in part, it was our expectations. And certainly the era that you grew up in was really one of the most affluent growing times. The expectation was it was never going to stop. The world was good and it was just getting better. Your generation probably came away with some expectations that the party doesn't end. The economic crisis happened and the world changed.
So, Robin, there we have Sam's father talking about the economic crisis happened and the world changed. Of course, things have been changing for the middle class in this country for some time. What do you say about these expectations that this generation is dealing with relative to the baby boomer generation, for example?
Well, that was one of the things that we found in researching our book, is that many of these same things were said to us when we were young in the 60s and 70s. I don't know how old Sam's father is, but that belief that you go to college and you maybe take on some debt, although in our day the debt was much smaller proportionally, but you pay for college and then at the other end you have the good life. That was hammered into me and my age mates as well when we were growing up. And you know, the economy was really great in the 50s and early 60s, and then when we graduated into the late 70s, early 80s, the economy really sucked. And mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, so many of these things are much the same. I think that I think that Nate is right, that it's exaggerated much more now because of the amount of student debt that people graduate with. But many of those same problems, you know, they were talking about PhDs driving taxi cabs back when I was young. We found a book that was published in 1976 called The Overeducated American that pretty much said there are just too many people in the pipeline of getting their bachelor's degrees and advanced degrees, and they'll never be able to make good on that education at the other end. And, you know, maybe it took us longer to reach where we were going than we had anticipated, and that's very likely to be what's happening with millennials as well.
Sure. Nate, I'd love to sort of ask you this. And, you know, one of the sort of questions we put out there is there really something going on with this generation? Or, is there a sort of sense of entitlement here and expectation that things should be better than they really are? What are you hearing, or sort of how do you respond to that, both from what you're hearing from this project and as a millennial yourself?
Well, you know, people do say, we get a lot of comments saying that, you know, this generation seems to be just whining and entitled. But, you know, I think that part of the story seems to be, I don't know, a little bit more deeply rooted. I mean, there is a group of postgrads who graduated, you know, from 2008, you know, to 2010. And they are, I think, the ones that are actually getting the real short end of the stick, because as they are looking for work and as the economy is kind of slowly recovering, we're seeing that more recent graduates from, you know, 2012 and everything like that are entering into the workforce and getting the jobs that the earlier graduates might have gotten, and they're left having to explain a four-year gap. And so I feel like that is not so much entitlement as much as it is the reality that they're dealing with.
Indeed, the reality of a changing economic landscape. Listeners, we're talking about this series that WBUR is doing, Generation Stuck. We'd love to hear from you if you're a 20-something struggling to make your way in this economy, or if you're a Gen Xer, a baby boomer, whatever, if you identify with this concern. We're at 1-800-423-8255. We've got a bunch of people who want to be on the air. So let's go to Catherine, who's calling from Lunenburg. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I live in the same town as Sam Mackin, and I kind of just took a different approach to it. I actually started my own business. I graduated from Pepperdine in 2008 and moved from LA to be closer to my parents. I do live with them now, but I think that a lot of it is about getting creative and figuring out what you're good at that you can contribute. You know, there might not be a job that's created for you. You kind of have to sometimes, in my case, I created one for myself.
And so, Catherine, is that the trick for your generation? I mean, when you hear Catherine's story, for example, that we started this segment with, does that resonate with you? And does that require sort of a more creative approach, I guess, for the one that you took. I mean, it sounds like you're living with your parents, you created your own job, so this is proposing a sort of non-traditional route, it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, I lived on my own after I graduated in L.A. and then in Tennessee shortly. And I decided I wanted to live closer to my family. I started a gymnastics studio called Skills and Thrills here in Lindenburg in September, and it's been going really well. You know, I knew that I was good at working with kids, so I decided that I would figure out what I was really good at and try to contribute to the town rather than, I'm really happy here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a great place, and I think a lot of it is how you look at it, what your outlook is, that there might not be exactly what I'm looking for. You know, I worked in television in L.A. That doesn't exist in the same capacity here in Massachusetts, so I just kind of branched out.
Well, Catherine, thanks so much for your call. Nate, what do you hear in Catherine's story there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of comments coming in, you know, that creativity is the key. And in a sense, it is. You know, young people need to be creative in order to get employment. But there's also a lot of talk about, you know, when did the honest living 9-to-5 job end? A lot of people may not necessarily be equipped or may not necessarily even want to, you know, be or go into, you know, a creative job. You know, they kind of want to just work a 9-to-5, and they're finding that those aren't available to them.
Well, can I?
Absolutely, Robin, jump right in.
I think that 9-to-5, even for 9-to-5 jobs, doesn't really exist anymore. If you're talking about professional jobs, it seems to me that young people are expected to be sort of on call round the clock. You know, they're always checking their email, and if there's a work emergency, they're supposed to respond right away. So I think that I think they're working actually harder than their parents did at this stage in their lives because they're always on and they're always devoted in a way. There's less of a boundary between home life and work life.
Let's take another call. Seth is calling from Brighton. Hi, Seth. You're on the air.
Hey, Anthony. How you doing?
Very well.
Glad to hear it. So I fall into the 20-something, saddled with, you know, $100,000 worth of debt. And, you know, I'm a teacher during the day, and I have a second job at night.
Hmm.
And I'm glad that you guys are talking about the expectations that are heaped on high schoolers because I see it firsthand. And I think in a lot of ways, high schoolers are asked to make very large decisions about their lives at a very young age. And I think that there needs to be a little bit more of a value placed on taking your time and, as Catherine said, really assessing what it is that you're good at and what you like to do rather than this sort of domino effect. It's like, okay, as soon as you get your cap and gown in high school, you have to step off onto the college campus. I think there needs to be a little bit more time to breathe and cultivate and really think about your life decisions rather than forcing kids, essentially, to make a tough decision.
Seth, it sounds like really wise and really sound advice. Robin, let me sort of put that to you. Is it realistic in most cases? Because there is a sort of, when we talk about $100,000 college debts and it being difficult out there in the job market, is that a luxury that a lot of people can even afford?
Well, it is a luxury, but it's actually an increasingly more common life stage. I mean, there's a school of thought that there's a new developmental stage called emerging adulthood, where young people actually are sort of taking a longer time to explore their options and to do a little bit more interior exploration. Now, what Seth is suggesting is that maybe you don't go straight to college and start accruing that debt, and that's possible too. That gap year is becoming more and more possible, more and more popular.
Mm.
But that lengthening of time before you have to make fully adult commitments, I think, is becoming more of the norm.
Robin, the subtitle of your book, of course, is Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? I'd like to talk to you about at least one or two of those reasons. And one of the things you write about is about choices, more choices these days, and that can cause some young people to feel powerless. That sounds sort of counterintuitive, and I'm just wondering if you can explain that.
Well, there's actually research on this. There's a famous jam experiment where they put out 6 varieties of jam in a supermarket and told people that they could taste them and, you know, choose one and buy it. And so about 30% of people tasted a couple of flavors and bought something. Then when they put out 24 varieties of jam, very few people tasted anything, and only about 3% bought anything because they got a little bit paralyzed by having so many options in front of them. They just decided, this is too hard, I won't decide anything. And that's sort of how a lot of young people are made to feel, especially because with the web, you can kind of see all your options out there, whether it's professional options or maybe dating options or what to do tonight options. And so it does start to feel a little bit like, rather than sit down and make a careful choice, I'm just gonna feel overwhelmed and not choose anything. There's number six options seems to be kind of the magic number.
Interesting. Well, Nate, does that resonate with you? I mean, this idea of there just being so much to choose from out there, especially in this world of social media and interconnected world and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and I do agree, and I think that it goes, you know, even beyond that. When college students, they work for several years towards a major, towards a certain profession, and they get out into the real world, and their expectation of going into this profession that they've studied for is kind of knocked down. They find that they're not able to get a job in that chosen field. All of a sudden, they have to reevaluate, and all of these opportunities and positions are open to them. And we have heard that, you know, when they have to choose, when they have to take a step back and start to choose, okay, where do I go from here? And they have everything out on the table, all of these opportunities, they tend to get a little bit paralyzed by decision.
Fascinating. Well, we think we've got time for at least one more call. Let's go to Jan, who's calling from Revere. Hi, Jan, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, guys. I just have a couple of questions that I want to ask the students. It's what did they get their degrees in? Did they do any internships or join any professional organizations in their field? Or do they just kind of have a sort of a role, their own degree, that there really is no jobs in?
And Jan, when you're saying you want to ask the students these questions, do you mean the folks that have been writing in about Generation Stuck?
Yeah.
Let me put that question to Nate.
Yeah, I mean, we have students or postgrads writing who come from all sorts of different backgrounds academically. And, of course, more liberal arts students, but we also have people who have gone into law and the sciences and teaching. And by way of internships, you know, there are some people who actually can't afford to go into an internship because a lot of them are unpaid and they're perhaps paying their own college tuition. And so to go into an internship program that doesn't pay isn't really an option for them. And so they're forced to take a job that actually will pay, and that actually limits the amount of experience that they can get before entering the job market.
Yeah, I think that's one of the harshest things that's happened in the economy is this expectation that you should be doing unpaid internships. Mm. Or in the case of my field in journalism, lots of people are blogging for free. And, you know, it's only a rare young person who can really afford to do that full time.
And Robin, you point out that, two-thirds of wage growth for a person's career happens in their first decade of work. So we're talking about an expectation that can really have consequences that a person has to live with then for a long time.
Right. And so can graduating into a bad economy, what Nate referred to earlier. There have been studies finding that that it can go on for as long as 20 years, that you make significantly less than people who graduated maybe just 6 months before you when the economy was better.
Hmm. We heard in that piece that introduced the segment, Catherine working really hard and hoping that she could get into an AmeriCorps program where she would earn essentially $1,000 a month. I mean, Robin, are programs like that actually, I don't know, I mean, do they sound like they're not good for the economy?
You mean to just sort of get slave labor?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if that's the way you want to characterize it, yeah.
Yeah, and then to reject her on top of that. Yeah. Good for the economy. I don't know. I mean, if we could go back to the old days of, you know, Peace Corps kind of stuff where you could actually use this time in your life to have an experience that gives you, you know, sort of basic earnings and is also just a great experience that will open up a whole new vista for you, that would be great if there were some way to combine that.
Well, Robin Morantz-Hennig, thanks so much for helping us deepen this conversation. Really, really happy to have you on the program today. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
That's Robin Morantz-Hennig. She's co-author of 20-something, Why Do Young Adults Seem Stuck? You can find an excerpt from her book at our website, radioboston.org. And Nate Goldman is WBUR's social media producer and creator of WBUR's Generation Stuck. Nate, thanks so much for coming in. Thanks for this series. It's fascinating.
Thank you.
And listeners, the conversation continues at radioboston.org. J.H. Gorton writes on our website, I can't even begin to service my debt without additional debt for a professional degree. We're not entitled. We're just the victims of dramatically inflated bars to entry. Stay with us. There's more Radio Boston ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.